Welcome, everybody. We are holding Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Shlishi. And in this chapter, the Rambam is going to address the next five mitzvahs in the laws of Avodah Zarah. Remember, the Rambam enumerated 51 mitzvahs that are all covered in the under the umbrella of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. The previous chapter, he dealt with the first three mitzvahs. And the next chapter, this chapter, chapter 3, the first chapter was an introduction of history, the second chapter was the first three mitzvahs, and the third chapter is the subsequent five mitzvahs, which means mitzvah Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, and Ches. What are they? Let's recall them briefly. The fourth mitzvah of Avodah Zarah is not to worship Avodah Zarah according to the unique, distinct fashion in which it served. The next one is mitzvah Hey was not to bow down to it. Mitzvah Vav is not to create an idol for yourself. Mitzvah Zayin is not to create, not to fashion an idol even for somebody else. And finally, the last mitzvah going to be addressed in this chapter is not to create sculptures, even if only for beauty and decoration. The details and nuances of each of these five mitzvahs is going to be the theme of the third chapter of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Perek Shlishi, Halacha Aleph. Kol Ha'Eved Avodah Zarah Biritzaynoi Bizadeh. Whoever worships Avodah Zarah, worships idols, biritzaynoi, voluntarily, bezadin, willingly. And there's a difference between being biritzayn and being bezadin. For example, if somebody puts a gun to a Jew's head and says, I want you to worship this Avodah Zarah if you want me to spare your life, so the Jew is going to be doing it bemezid. He's doing it willingly. He knows what he's doing. But is it biratzin? Is it voluntarily? No. He's trying to save his life. So the Rambam says two things. If he does Avodah Zarah biratzin voluntarily with free volition and bezadin, it's intentional. He knows what he's doing. He's doing it willingly. It's premeditated. Chayav kares. He is liable to a heavenly death penalty. The details of what exactly kares is, the Rambam is going to address in the next section in Mishneh Torah, which is Hilchos Teshuvah. V'im hayu sham edim v'asra, if there were witnesses present who observed the act of idol worship and they warned this person before, then niskal, then he is liable of the death penalty through stoning. The details of this death penalty, the Rambam is going to address much later in the Rambam, in the book of Shoftim, the last book of the Rambam, where he addresses courts and laws and verdicts and penalties and punishments. Now, this is a very important condition, the Rambam said. It's not enough that witnesses saw him do it. Rather, it is vital and necessary for the witnesses to see what he's about to do and to warn him. And a warning means, number one, they have to explicitly tell him that what he's going to do is forbidden. That's not enough. They also have to explicitly relate to him the consequences, the exact details of the punishment that he may incur if he does this act. And that's still not enough. He has to respond to them in the affirmative, verbally, indicating that he acknowledges what they said, he understands what they said, and still he's going ahead to do it, and then he has to do it immediately, very shortly after, and then he is liable for the death penalty. V'imavar b'shgaga. What if he worshipped Avodah Zarah, but it was b'shgaga, it was inadvertently. For example, he did not know that this act was an act of Avodah Zarah. He did not know he was innocent. Or maybe he did know, but perhaps he didn't know the severity of the punishment, the details of what a shoygig is, the Rambam is going to address in Hilchos Shgagas. Everything has its place in the Rambam. So the Rambam wants you to remember the halacha, that if it's b'shoygig, the penalty is different. What shoygig means, that he doesn't address here, that he addresses in a special halacha called, section called Hilchos Shgagas. But if he worshipped Avodah Zarah inadvertently, he did not know that this was forbidden, that's the basic definition, maybe karban chatas kfuah. Then, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he would bring a sacrifice, an offering, and this was known as a regular karban chatas, a regular sin offering, a fixed one, meaning it doesn't fluctuate whether you're wealthy or you're poor, it's like some other sacrifices, it's kfuah, it's fixed, and generally it was a female goat. Halacha Beis. So the Rambam established what the penalties for Avodah Zarah was, and he gave us three categories. Number one, it was done volitionally and willingly, but without witnesses, and therefore there is no earthly penalty, only a heavenly penalty. One with witnesses and warning, there is a death penalty, and one which was a mistake, and there is a sacrifice, a carbon base. Avodah Zarah kavu Avodah Zarah l'chol tzelem v'tzelem l'chol tzura v'tzura. Many different forms of worship. The philosophers of idolatry, those who developed all of these rituals, established for every type of image and for every type of idol and for every type of image. And the worshiping methods for one is not like the other. Could go in an example. There is an idol called Pa'ir. It's known as the Pa'ir. Sha'avaydase, how do you worship it? Sha'yifar Adam Atzmeloy. A person has to expose his nakedness to it and actually defecate in its presence. That is the way you worship the Pa'ir. Umarkulis. There's another idol known as the Markulis, often translated as Mercury, which was a Greek and Roman god. Sha'avaydase, Sha'yizrik Loyavonim, Ayasalik Malafonav Avonim. Generally, it was in a formation of a triangle, three rocks, and you basically cast, you throw rocks on the Markulis and the Mercury, or you remove the rocks to create room for other people to throw rocks. That is how you worship this idol. And so many other diverse forms of worship that they establish for other images and for other idols. Lefichach, therefore, hapoyer atzmo lemarkulis, if somebody exposes his body and moves his bowels in front of Mercury, oishazorak evan lepoyer, or he casts a stone to the idol called poyer, in other words, he does not worship it according to the method, to the appropriate method that was established and institutionalized, this is how you worship this idol, poter, then this person would be exempt because atche yavid oisei derech avidosei, until he does not worship it according to the manner in which it is usually worshipped. Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, the Pasuk says, and let's quote the Pasuk, you should be careful. Maybe you're going to go and research other deities and going to say, Eicha yavdu hagoyim ha'eles Eloheim v'esakein gamoni. The Torah warns a Jew of going to research other idols and asking, how do the Gentiles serve and worship these gods? Because I want to emulate them. In other words, it says, you're looking, Eicha yavdu hagoyim ha'eles Eloheim, in plural. You want to know how exactly they worship their gods, because every god is a different form of worship, and that's what you want to do. What do we see from this pasuk? This is what the Torah says is avodah zarah. This is what is a violation in the Torah. This is the avodah zarah that I'm liable for. If I worship an avodah zarah according to the method of this particular avodah zarah, mipnei zeha inyan, because of this, Rambam says, fascinatingly, tzrichin beisdin leida darkei ha'avodas. Beisdin, the Jewish courts, must know all of the various methods. They must be well-versed in all of the various methods of the diverse idols of the age, she'ein seiklin ayuvad avodah zu, at she'yedu she'zui derech avodasa, because there's no way to administer a death penalty, even to a Jew who worshipped idolatry willingly and voluntarily with witnesses and warning, until we know that this is indeed exactly the method of how you engage in this avodah zarah. And if he did not do it that way, he will not be liable, and therefore Bezdin must learn the methods. Are you going to ask a question? In chapter 2, the Rambam said that there's a sin to read literature of avodah zarah and the methods of avodah. That was all when there's a danger that you're going to be lured in. You're reading it for interest, you're reading it for curiosity, or you're reading it for knowledge and information. Here, why is the Bezdin reading it? The Bezdin is reading it in order to be able to uproot avodah zarah. This type of reading, this far of avodah zarah, is not part of avodah zarah. On the contrary, that the Bezdin should know the halachos in order that they should be able to establish what is the verdict of Torah regarding every avodah zarah. Halacha gimel, v'azharah shel avodah seilu. We have a principle that when there is a punishment in Torah for something, we cannot just punish the person if there was no warning. Just like individually, every person must be warned before we could administer a punishment. If there was no warning, there will be no earthly punishment. The same is true collectively to Klal Yisrael. The Torah doesn't just write punishments. The Torah also inserts the warning. So the punishment for Avodah Zarah is clearly mentioned in Parsha Shoftim, actually this week's Parsha. That's where we know that the punishment of Avodah Zarah is skila, is stoning. That says clearly in Chumash. The question is, where is the warning for this in Torah? There's no punishment if there's no azharah. So the Rambam says, v'azharah shel avodah zarah. Where is there a warning to worship an avodah zarah according to its method of worship? Like we mentioned before, the Pa'ar or Markulis, v'kayotze behen. The answer is, hushakasov, this is Aseres HaDibris in Parshas Yisrael. And then it's repeated again the second time in Aseres HaDibris in Parshas Veschanan, where Moshe Rabbeinu, where Hashem tells the Jewish people, loisasa l'chapesel v'chol t'muna, loisashtachavem v'loisa avdeim. You should not serve them. Who are them? All of the various types of images and idols. When is this set? That if you worship an avodah zarah not according to the method that was established for this particular idol, you are not liable b'shar avodas. That is talking about if you engage in any form of service or worshiping. For example, you're defecating to the mercury, you're casting stones on the pa'ir, etc. Chutz, but there are four exceptions. Mimishtachave, if somebody bows down to an avodah zarah, ovezeveyach, somebody slaughters an animal to an avodah zarah, or makdir, somebody creates a fire and consumes consumes in that fire the meat of an animal for Avodah Zarah, or menasech, or somebody who pours a libation to Avodah Zarah. For example, you pour wine to an Avodah Zarah, you sprinkle blood to an Avodah Zarah. Avala oivet ba'achas me'arba Avodah Elu le'echad mikol mini Avodah Zarah chayev aval bishen derech Avodah Zarah bekach. If you engage in one of these four types of service, what are they again? Bowing down, slaughtering an animal, burning food to the Avodah Zarah, having it consumed in a fire, or libations, and the last one was, what did we do? We did bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, slaughtering an animal, having a fire consume the food in a flame for the Avodah Zarah, and finally libations, those four. Then the halacha is a person is liable, even though this is not the pattern through which this Avodah Zarah is worshipped. So again, if you're engaging in the particular rituals that were established for this Avodah Zarah, even if it's very weird and obscene and strange, and one wonders where is the honor and the glory, one is the liable, for example, the Pa'ur, defecating in front of the Pa'ur. But if I do these particular four things, then regardless what the particular ritual for this Avodah Zarah is, the person is liable. Ketzad, what does this mean? Harei shenisech lepa'ir. Somebody comes to the Baal Pa'ir idol. We usually, how do you worship it? By exposing your nakedness to it. But instead, he pours wine to the Pa'ir. Or shezavach lemarkulis. Or he comes to the Mercury idol, and instead of casting stones, which is the way you worship it, what does he do? He takes an animal, and he slaughters it for this pagan deity. Chayav, this person would be liable. What's the reason for this? Shenemar, the pasuk says, Shmoyis Perik Chav Bei, Zoyveach le'elohim yacharam, bilti la'ashashem levadai. Which means, somebody who slaughters an animal to a pagan deity shall be, yacharam, shall be given the death penalty, because one should not slaughter an animal only to Hashem. What do we see from here? There's a special violation about Zoyveach, something unique about Zoyveach. The Torah doesn't just say somebody who worships a pagan god, as it says in other places in Chumash, like we just learned, Loisa Avde. It says particularly Zoyveach. Come the Chazal and say, Zvicha b'chlal avoydes haya. Zvicha, slaughtering an animal, was included in one of the ways that people serve idols. One of the things they do is they slaughter animals to an idol. So it was included in all of the avodas, which the pasuk already says in Parshas Yisrael, loisa avdim, you should not serve idols. Why then does the pasuk distinguish one type of avodah called zayveach? V'lama yatzos, why did slaughtering an animal, why was it excluded from the generic statement that you're not allowed to worship any avodah zarah, any way that it's worshipped? Loimar lach, to teach you, here we have a principle that we speak about every single morning, and I want you to pay attention, so that tomorrow morning when you say this in davening, before you start haidu or baruch shama, you'll understand. It's the eighth principle of Rabbi Yishmael's 13 methods that Moshe gave the Jewish people of how to interpret the text of Torah. What is number 8? Davar shahaya bechlal, v'yatza min haklal, loy lelamed al atzma yatza, lo lelamed al haklal kula yatza, which means, if something essentially was part of a klal, it was part of a generic, inclusive law, and then the Torah extricates it from the klal, it removes it from the klal, yatza min haklal, and gives it a special or specific treatment and law, we say, loy lelamed al atzma yatza. It's not only to teach something about himself, lelamed al haklal kula yatza. It teaches about the whole klal, things that are similar to it will also be given the same law. Well, how does this apply here? The Torah could have said loisa avdim, and that means some avodah zarahs you slaughter animals, just like some avodah zarahs you cast stones, like Markulis. But the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah identifies zvicha as a separate avera, zveyach le'elohim yachem. V'lama yatzos, loima lecha, to teach you ma zvicha miyuchedes sha'evdin bol Hashem. Zvicha is unique, slaughtering an animal is unique. Why? It's a replica of what we do to Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't cast stones in the Beis HaMikdash, but we slaughter animals in the Beis HaMikdash. That's something that we do for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Torah teaches that if I do this pattern, if I do this ritual to an alien god, to a fake god, to a false god, then I am chayev skila, zoyveach le'elohim yechram. Bein hoysa derech avedase bizvichai eina bizvich. Regardless if this was the way of worshipping it, or it's not the way of worshipping it. That's what the pasuk is trying to tell me. The pasuk is trying to say, zeveach, if you do zeveach, you're always yechram. And that's why it's not included in the regular loisa of them, because other forms of worship, you're only liable if this is the appropriate way of doing it for this Avodah Zarah, if this is the ritual that was established for the Avodah Zarah. Zvicha, the Torah wants to say, works for all Avodah Zarahs. If I slaughter an animal for Avodah Zarah, chalila, zeveach le'elohim yecharam. Why? because Zvicha is unique. And what's unique about Zvicha? Let's think about it. It's a type of Avodah that we do for Hashem. So when I do this for an Avodah Zarah, it's something much more severe because I'm actually taking something that belongs, so to speak, to the divine, and I am using it for the Avodah Zarah. Af kol Avodah shim yuchedes l'ashem im avad bala el acher. Bein shoysa derech Avodasoy bekach bein sheine bekach chayev aleha. So now we deduce from this that similarly, any other avoda that's done in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan for the Ribbono Shel Olam, if I do that avoda for an avoda zara, whether it is the normal pattern of worshipping it or not, I am liable. Again, davar shahaya bichlal v'yatza min haklal loy lalamad al atzmi yatza lalamad al haklal kula yatza. Now, what else do we do in the Beis HaMikdash? We slaughter animals. What else do we do? We take the meat of the animal and we put it on the fire, on the altar, so the fire consumes it. Reach nichaya. What else do we do? We sprinkle blood or we pour wine. So all these things, just like Zvicha, if you do it to an Avodah Zarah, I don't care if it's not the normal way of worship, but the person would still be liable. What about bowing down to an Avodah Zarah? Remember he mentioned bowing down. We don't stand in the Beis HaMikdash and we do a karbon bowing down. That's not part of the rituals. The Rambam says, Lekach Nemar. But that's why the Pasuk says, In Shmais Lamedalad Lo Yisishtacha Ve'le El Acher. Don't bow down to an alien god. L'chayev Alay Shtacha Ve'ya Filu En Derech HaVedase Bekach. To make a person liable when you bow down to Avodah Zarah, again, even if that is not the pattern in which usually it's worshipped. You see, bowing down, you couldn't learn from Zaveyach Le'elohim Yechram because you don't bow down in the Beis HaMikdash as part of the ritual of Karbanos. So that's why the Rambam says, Hishtachava, something else. There's a special pasuk, Lo'yishtachave Le'kelacher. You shouldn't bow down to another god. Now, it already says in Aseres HaDibris, Lo'yishtachave Le'hem V'loy Sa'avdem. You should not bow down and you should not serve them. The unique pasuk Lo Yisishtachav Le'el Acher teaches me again that this is something unique, that regardless what type of god it is, bowing down makes you liable. V'hu adin, therefore the same halacha is lamakter, somebody who burns something to an idol. U'menasech, somebody who does a libation. V'zoyrik u'menasech echadu, don't confuse. Sprinkling blood or pouring wine or another beverage to an idol are identical. They have the same halacha. They are both done in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore you are always liable for this type of worshipping the Avodah Zarah. Halacha dalet. Safas lo tzoya. If somebody feeds or sprinkles tzoya, which is excrement, to an idol, this is very similar to sprinkling blood, or nafsach lo avid shel memi raglaya, or he pours before the idol, a vat filled with urine, which again, even though it's urine and excrement, but in its action and its form, it's very similar to the libations and the sprinkling of the blood. So chayav, then you would be liable. Why? Because this is very similar to noiseach, to what the Rambam said a moment ago, menasech and zayrek, even though the substance is a different substance, it's urine or excrement, but the action is a replica, it's almost exact, as sprinkling blood or libation of another liquid, whether it's water or wine. Here it happens to be meiraglayim, urine, so the person is liable. Shachat lo, even if this is not, as most mefarshim explain, even if this is not the regular method that is done with this idol. Shachat lo chagav. What happens if you slaughter for this idol a chagav, a grasshopper, a locust? Now it's putter. You're putter. You're not liable. Why? Even though you're saying you slaughtered, and we just said that if you slaughter an animal to an Avodah Zarah, you're liable. The answer is because when you're slaughtering a chagav, this is not similar to shechita, because by a grasshopper, there's no concept of shechita, there's no concept of slaughtering. Even with a kosher grasshopper, there's no concept. That's not how you make it kosher for consumption. You don't take the chagav and take it by its neck and slaughter it. It just does not apply. The whole concept of slaughtering does not apply to the chagav. And therefore, this is not considered a replica of the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash that you did for the avodah zarah. Elim kein hoisa avodasa bekach. Unless, of course, this was the way in which you worship this idol. The way of worshiping it was taking a grasshopper and cutting it by its neck. If that's the way you worship it and you do it, it's liable. But just saying that I took a grasshopper and I did it to the Pa'er or to the Markulis or to another Avodah Zarah, the Baal, the Moilach, whatever the Avodah Zarahs are, it's not going to be applicable. The person won't be liable because the whole concept of Shechitas Chagav is not existing in the Beis HaMikdash in any form or fashion. V'chein, interesting. Shachat lo behema, mechuseres aver, pater elim kenas derech avedasa bekach. Similarly, if you slaughter to an Avodah Zarah, an animal that is missing a limb, such an animal is not... you cannot bring such an animal for a carbon If the animal is blemished, Jews don't bring it for a carbon, but a non-Jew could bring it for a carbon. But if it's missing a limb, then even non-Jews would not bring it for a carbon. And therefore, if a person slaughters an animal for an avodah zarah that is missing a limb, unless this is the derech avodasa, the person would be potter, the person would be completely exempt. The Ravid here struggles to understand the Rambam. He says, I don't understand. Slaughtering a grasshopper and slaughtering a cow that's missing a limb, you're not liable? And sprinkling excrement or urine, you are liable? It's hard for him to understand. The Kesef Mishnah and other Mefarshim try to explain that there's a difference between the two. Because when I'm sprinkling excrement or urine, it's mamash a replica of zrika and libations, even though it's a different substance. But the shechita, so even though the substance is different, but this exact avodah was done in the Beis HaMikdash, even though it's being done with a different substance. But when I slaughter a grasshopper, or I take an animal that's missing a limb and I slaughter it to avodah zarah, so he says, here it's very different. Why is it different? Because he says, you have these things in the Beis HaMikdash. You don't slaughter a grasshopper in the Beis HaMikdash. You don't slaughter an animal that's missing a limb. But you slaughter living organisms in the Beis HaMikdash. You slaughter sheep, and you slaughter goats, and you slaughter bulls, and you slaughter cows. So you have this phenomenon. And on the other hand, these are so different, because you're not going to slaughter a grasshopper, and you're not going to slaughter a behemoth that's missing a limb. And therefore, because it's so different, you are not liable, because it's completely of a different genre than what you would offer to Hashem. On the other hand, when you are sprinkling libations of urine and excrement and so forth, since it's something that doesn't exist at all in the Beis HaMikdash, the whole concept, you don't have this existing in the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore you just look at the act. The act is that he's sprinkling, and that is similar to the Beis HaMikdash, therefore you're liable. The Ur Sameach, Rabbeinu Meir Simcha Koyen of Dvinsk, he distinguishes between the fact that one is slaughtering and one is a libation. Slaughtering is not the act of Avodah Zarah. Slaughtering is preparing the animal to be able to be consumed by the Avodah Zarah. Sprinkling blood, sprinkling excrement, sprinkling urine, that is already part of the act of Avodah Zarah. Slaughtering is only a preparation. So the Ur Sameach says, therefore, when it comes to slaughtering, if it's an exact replica of the Beis HaMikdash, then you're liable. If it's not an exact replica, then you are not liable. Where sprinkling is much more severe, other Mefarshim have different explanations, the famous Evan Ezel, Rabbi Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, and other Mefarshim who try to explain the difference and answer the question of the Ravid. The Rambam now continues. And here there is a hybrid between the two ideas we spoke about. The Avodah Zarah that you're worshipping according to the method that it's usually worshipped, and the Avodah Zarah that you're worshipping in a way that it's not usually worshipped, but it's one of the four categories that we described. And here, there is a little interesting synthesis. Avodah Zarah sh'ayiv din oisa b'makal. An idol that you serve it usually through a makal, through drums, let's say. You take sticks, you bang the sticks against each other, or you beat the sticks on the idol, but it's some form of ritual with sticks and drums. So now, here's an interesting thing. So what would be the proper way of worshipping it? With the sticks. So you took a stick and shavar makal b'fana. You took a stick and you broke the stick in the presence of the Avodah Zarah. Chayav, you would be liable, because this is a form of shechita. Since this Avodah Zarah employs sticks as part of its ordinary ritual, when you take a stick and you break it, you, so to speak, broke its spine, you destroyed it, you slaughtered it, you killed it. So in this Avodah Zarah, this is similar to shechita in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore you would be liable, even though the ritual is not exactly breaking sticks. It's drumming or beating sticks or banging sticks or knocking sticks. But here you would be chayev and v'neseres, and it would even become prohibited as an offering for avodah zarah, which is prohibited. Zarak makal b'fana. What if you didn't break the stick? You just took the stick and you threw it to the avodah zarah. Chayev, you would be liable. Again, you're sprinkling, you're throwing. So it's like the Beis HaMikdash where you threw blood. Now, throwing a stick is not like throwing blood, but since here, the regular way of working with this Avodah Zarah is through sticks, so that is its instrument. So just like when you break the stick, it's similar to Shechita. When you throw the stick, it's similar to Zrika. But here, Ve'ena Neseres, the stick will not become prohibited. You can take it home. She'ein Zrika Samakal Kein Zrika Sadam, because it's ultimately too remote from sprinkling blood. She'amakal Kamayz Shehu V'adam Mispazer, because the stick remains intact, where the blood spatters, and you know it goes all over the place. So therefore, it's so much different than Zrika, because it's so much different different than Zrika. Therefore, in order for it to become Asur, it has to be more similar to the Avoida in the Beis HaMikdash. So if it was like the Avoida in the Beis HaMikdash, when you break the stick, it's more similar to Shechita, because you actually kill the stick, you destroy the stick. It's a form of death for the stick. So the stick also becomes Asur. When you spring, when you throw the stick, your Takechayev, it's similar to the Avoida in the Beis HaMikdash, even though this is not exactly how you worship this Avoida Zorah, because you drum with it, you don't throw sticks, but nonetheless, you're still chayiv, but the stick doesn't become us. If somebody accepts any type of avodah zarah, and he verbally accepts it as a god, he basically declares that this is his god, then this person becomes potentially liable for the death penalty. Even if a person lifts up a brick, for Amar Lai, and he speaks to the brick, and he says to her, Eli Ata, you are my God, or any similar verbal statement that basically turns this brick into an idol. So the Rambam says, Chay of this person is liable. And even if within Teich Kedei Dibur, which means within a few seconds of saying to this brick, you are my God, the person retracts it, this is called Teich Kedei Dibur, which means within the time that it would take to say, Shalom Alecha Rabbi, greetings to you, my Rebbe, which is a few seconds. So usually in Halacha we know that if I make, let's say, a vow, within a few seconds I retract it, so the vow doesn't have validity because I uprooted it. But when it comes to Avodah Zarah, just like we learned in the previous chapter about Megadev, Teich Kedei Dibur means nothing, and therefore the retraction is meaningless, and the person would still get the death penalty for worshipping, accepting Avodah Zarah, and, of course, if there were witnesses, and there was a warning, etc. And the reason for this, Duran explains in Masechet Nedarim, Daf Pei Zayin, I think Duran says the reason is because when things are so serious and so severe, remember, the witnesses warned you, and they explained to you the death penalty, and then you did what you did, we assume that the person really thought through. This wasn't just a Freudian slip, a spontaneous, you know, statement. He wasn't thinking much. This was really, really premeditated, and therefore, Teich Kedei Dibur does not apply in these areas. Hey, fascinating halach. If you worship idolatry according to the method that applies to this idolatry, even if you do it in a scorning way with the intention to mock it, you're still liable. If somebody removes his clothes and exposes his nakedness and defecates in front of the Baal Peir simply to mock it, to scorn it, to humiliate it. We know when you throw pebbles on somebody, when you throw rocks on somebody, you're usually trying to make fun of them. You want to denigrate them and abuse them. That's why he's throwing the rocks to the mercury. But since this is the way that you worship it, you may think that you're mocking it, but this is actually the way of you're worshiping it. So chayav, the person is liable. Now, you're not going to give him the death penalty because his intention was what? To scorn the Avodah Zarah, maybe carbon al shigagasei. So he has to bring a carbon chatas for his mistake. In other words, you don't say there was no Avodah Zarah here. On the contrary, he was embarrassing the Avodah Zarah. No, there was Avodah Zarah here, but it was a mistake. His intention was not to worship Avodah Zarah. This is a classic shigig where you did something wrong, but you did not know that it was wrong. You had very good intentions. Such a person, you're not going to give the death penalty. He will bring a carbon chatas. Vav, ha'ived Avodah Zarah me'ahava. This is a fascinating halacha on the Rambam. Somebody who engages in idolatry out of love. What do we mean out of love? A person has this unique pleasure, this unique craving for a particular image, because of the sculpturing work. He is just fascinated by the aesthetics. And you know what? They do certain form, whatever the form of worship with this particular image, with this particular idol, it's very pleasing to the person. Whether it's pleasing, the beauty of it is pleasing. In other words, there's no idea here that this is a god, this is a divine deity. No, it's just there's something very enjoyable to him in this act. Or maybe he was just afraid of this idol. He's afraid she's going to harm him. Just as the delusion of those who worship it, that these idols can either benefit you or harm you. If the person accepts this deity as his god, as his deity, then he's liable for stoning. But if he worships this idol, even if he follows the path that it's usually worshipped with, or he does one of the four above forms of service, which means he bows down to it, or he slaughters an animal to it, or he burns an animal on it, or he does a libation to it, the four avodas, still, if it's done out of the aesthetical pleasure, nothing to do with God, or fear, this ludicrous fear in his mind that this can harm him, he is actually not liable, because in his mind, even though he did the act of Avodah Zarah, but nonetheless, in his mind, this has nothing to do with a deity, nothing to do with a god, and therefore he would be Potter. Somebody's asking a good question. In the previous halacha, he said, when you're worshiping it in order to scorn it, right? You're chayav a carbon chatas. You're chayav a carbon chatas. Why here Potter? It's not better than before, but before you're also doing the avodah, but you don't believe that it's God. You want to humiliate it. Here, you don't even want to humiliate it. You're actually enjoying it. So the Kesef Mishnah says, indeed, the Rambam means potter from skila. He means potter. He's exempt. There's no death penalty of skila because you can't call this avodah zarah b'mezit. Hamigafif, somebody who hugs avodah zarah, he hugs it. Hamenashikla, he kisses her. Hamechabed, he sweeps up the ground before her. Hamarbitz, he pours water lefaneha in order to settle the dust. V'hamarchitzla, he bathes the avodah zarah. V'hasach, he anoints her. Hamalbish, he dresses her. Hamanal, he puts on her shoes. V'chol kayotze b'divrei kavod ha'elo. Other forms of honor and respect that he shows the avodah zarah. He doesn't worship it as a god, but he just does different acts that are respectful for it, and doesn't mean that this is how you worship it. No, he cleans up the floor around it, he dresses it up, he anoints it, he kisses it, he hugs it. So what's the halacha? The Rambam says, oivre b'loisasa. This person violated a violation, a mitzvah of the Torah Shenema, the Pasuk says, in Aseres HaDibris, lo yisa'avdim. You shouldn't worship all of the pagan gods. Udvarim elu b'chlal avoydahein. And all this is included in avoydah. V'afal pikein ein eloika. Still he won't get lashes, al achas mehen, of any of these things. Lefi she'enon b'fedesh. Because these forms of worship are not explicitly discussed in the Torah. So this is just a generic prohibition on honoring an avodah zarah, which is included in the words loisa avdim. This is called a lav shabeklalus. A lav shabeklalus means when the Torah says that something is prohibited, but it doesn't specify an individual act. It can include many different acts that will all be included in this umbrella, since there's no specific lav for each one, so therefore you do not get malchus. When it comes to worshiping an avodah zarah, here the Torah says loisa of them, don't worship them, and the Torah intimates in Parshas Re'eh that if I inquire and find out how they worship an avodah zarah, I get skila for that. So the Torah gave me a violation for every type of avodah zarah, worshiping it according to its particular individual method. But these types of respect, which are just general things that are not the derech of avodah of the avodah zarah, it's just honoring the avodah zarah, they're included in loisa of them, so it's a prohibition. But there is no malchus. Of course, if the way of this avodah zarah was, the way you worshipped it was to do one of these things. Let's say you worship this avodah zarah through kissing it, or through hugging it, or through sweeping before it, and you did it with that kavana to worship it, then the person would be liable, because this is classic avodah zarah. Yashav kaitz b'raglai, b'fnei avodah zarah, lo yashuach v'yitlenu, neshenirik ha'mashtachavala. What happens if a thorn goes into somebody's leg, and he's standing in front of an avodah zarah? What do you want to do? You want to bend down in order to take it out. Don't do that, because it appears like you're bowing down to the avodah zarah, even though you're not. You're just trying to take out your thorn. What happens if there's a hole in your pocket and all your money falls out and they're scattered on the floor in front of the avodah zarah? Here again, if you bend down to take the money, it seems like you are bowing down to the avodah zarah. So in these cases, you don't have to lose your money. Just sit down and then take out the thorn or collect your money, and then you stand up and you walk away, so it doesn't appear like you're bowing down to the avodah zarah. Halachiches. Partzufos hamakalchos mayim b'fnei avodah zarah. Partzufos are statues with faces of people, and they often had statues which were fountains. They flowed, water flowed from them. These were fountains, and they stand in front of an avodah zarah. There is an idol right behind them or right above them. Lo yaniach piv al piem v'yishta. Like the water fountain, you shouldn't place your mouth on their mouth and drink. Because again, even though you're just thirsty and you're not worshipping the avodah zarah, the water is not water of avodah zarah. That's not the problem. Water of avodah zarah, you're not allowed to drink. The water is just flowing from a fountain. You're allowed to drink that water. However, there is an avodah zarah on top of it or near it or behind it. When I put my mouth on it, it looks like I may be kissing the statue, the avodah zarah, and therefore I'm not allowed to do it. Don't put your mouth on the mouth of the water, because it looks like you're kissing the avodah zarah for the person who's standing perhaps a little distant from you. Tess. if somebody makes an avodah zarah for himself, I don't only mean if you make it with your bare hands. Even if you commission somebody to do it for you, you hire somebody, a Jew or a non-Jew, to make you an avodah zarah, you may have not worshipped it. You're just making an idol, making this and this idol, loika. This person receives, if there are witnesses and there's a warning, he receives lashes. Shenema, the Pasuk says, in Aseres HaDibris, lo yisasalecha pesel v'chol tmuna. Do not make for you, which means on your behalf, whether you make it yourself on your behalf or somebody else makes it on your behalf, a pesel, an idol, or any graven image. Similarly, if somebody makes with his own hands an avodah zarah for somebody else, not for himself, even for a non-Jew, he receives lashes. And there's another pasuk in Kedoshim. Graven images for deities you should not create. Lefichach, therefore, what if you have both? Since I create an avodah zarah myself with my hands for myself, this person will receive lashes twice because there were two separate sins. Number one, he made an avodah zarah for himself, that he would have violated even if somebody else made it. And in addition to that, he actually made with his own hands, he made an idol, that he would have been violating that mitzvah even if he did it for somebody else. And here they both come together. Halachiyut. So the Rambam now finished. Till Halachiyut, the Rambam finished. The next few mitzvahs that he enumerated in the 51 mitzvahs in the introduction to Avodah Zarah, he covered already. Not to worship Avodah Zarah according to its natural pattern. Not to bow down to it, which interestingly includes also the other generic Avodahs of slaughtering, of burning, and of libations. He also included the mitzvah of what? Not to create an idol for yourself. And finally, not to make an idol even for somebody else. Now the Rambam concludes the Perek with the last mitzvah, mitzvah ches, shaloi lasas tzureis afilu linoi. So the Rambam explains, asur las, a fascinating halach, asur lasas tzureis linoi. A person is not allowed to create, not allowed to carve out, not allowed to make busts, images, even for just for decoration. We will see what type of images in a moment. Not all, some. Even though he's not building, he's not carving or sculpturing an idol for the sake of idol worship, which we already learned is forbidden, even if you don't worship it. That's not the point. The point is he wants to have a beautiful piece of furniture or a beautiful bust in his dining room or living room or wherever it is, and therefore he makes it simply for beauty. Shenema, he's not allowed to. Shenema, the pasuk says in Parshas Yisrael, the end of Yisrael. What does this mean literally? Do not make with me gods of silver or gods of gold. Says the Rambam Kalaimar, what this means is tzura shel kesef shel zav shein linoi. Do not create images made of silver or made of gold, even if it's only linoi, even if it's only for decoration and for beauty, one should not make it. Why? Because those who make an error may make a mistake, and in their mind they will imagine or they will think that this is designated for avodah zarah. So the Torah says, "Lo sasun iti Elohei chesev Elohei zav." Even though he's not trying to make a god of gold or a god of silver, but nonetheless, if somebody does this for decoration, somebody could make an error and think that this was done what? This was made like many others, many other pagan idolaters who make these images which are made for avodah zarah. Ve'ein asur lotzur linoi ela tzuras ha'adam bolvad. This prohibition is to make a bust, to make an image only of a human being. The visage of a human being is forbidden. So if I create a sculpture of the human body, the human anatomy, the human physical organism, a sculpture of the human being, whether it's silver or gold, or we'll see in a moment, even other materials, this is forbidden, as the Rambam explains. Lefichach, ein tzarin. You are not allowed to carve out or sculpture an image of a human being, loy be'etz, not in wood or with wood, v'loy besid, not in lime or cement, v'loy be'even, and not in rock, tzuras ha'adam, the image of a person. V'hu, there's a condition, shetehe atzura boiletes, if the image protrudes, if it's a raised image, if it's sticking out. Kagoin, for example, hatsir, the images, vahakir, the moldings, shebitraklin, that they often made on the walls of palaces, of beautiful mansions and palaces, vakayotzebehen, similar structures where they created moldings, busts, sculptures of human beings that were protruding, that's forbidden. Vimtsar, and if what if somebody does create such a molding, create such a sculpture? Leike. he is liable to the penalty of lashes, because it says, Loisasun iti elekei kesev lechezov, the person who actually makes, the person who sculptures these types of sculptures, Avalim hoisatsura mushkas, but if the image was mushkas, mushkas means it was a sunken image, it was engraved, oitsura shel samanin, or it was a portrait, which means you use dyes in order to create a portrait. For example, the images that they create on luchais, on tablets of wood or stone, or tapestries, forms that become part of the weaving process, and they're interwoven into the material, so it's a tapestry, then it is permissible. And the basic reason for this is because it's not similar to the image of a person. When you're sculpturing a person and it's a protruding image, then it's like a real replica of a person, where the various limbs and organs are protruding from the human body, from the human skeleton. But here, when it's sunken, when it's engraved, or it's a tapestry, it is not such a replica of the human being, and therefore it is permissible. Why is this only the image of a person? The Rambam says, Tzuras Adam, he brings a pasuk like, Sasun iti elehei chesev elehei zav. And it doesn't only mean gold and silver. Gold and silver are just examples. But as the Rambam says, it's wood, it's stone, it's cement, it's lime, it's plaster. So why is it only Adam? The Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Lametes, and it's quoted in many poskim, says something fascinating. And he says that when you read the Chumash, there's no nekudas, there's no vowels, how we pronounce the words. We know how to pronounce the words as part of the oral tradition. But the fact that you could pronounce it in different ways is significant, because all of the various possible pronunciations are part of the depth of the pasuk. So when you read the pasuk, loisasun iti, you can also read it differently. Loisasun oisi elohe chesev elohe zav loisasun lechem. Don't make me, Hashem says, don't make a form of me in gold and silver. Wow. Now you get it? There's only one thing in the world that reflects the Ribbono Shel Olam, a human being. When Hashem creates man, he says, Nasa Adam b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu. Let us create the human being in our image. Even the body, the physical organism of a human being, is a reflection of the divine. Every human being is carved, physically carved in the image of God. So the very physical structure and body of a person is, so to speak, a replica of the Kivayachal of Hashem. Or as the Shalah says, Adam comes from the word Adame, from the word Doime. You're a mirror, you're a reflection, you're a continuum, you're a manifestation, you're an embodiment of the divine. So understand, according to the Chinuch, the depth of this halacha. The depth of this halacha is that if I actually sculpture an image of a human being, what am I really sculpturing? I'm Kivayachal, making a sculpture of Hashem. The human being is the human being, a living person who is in the image of Hashem. When I turn that into a sculpture, kevayachal, I'm making a sculpture of Hashem. And therefore, it is absolutely forbidden, even if I'm not doing it to worship it. I'm just doing it for beauty. But that's the leisasun oisi, don't make me into an image. And when you make an image out of a person, you're actually making Hashem into an image. This demonstrates the infinite dignity and value that Torah conferred upon the human person and even the human physique. The Shulchan Aruch asks the question, or discusses the question, Shulchan Aruch Yeridei Simen Kuf Mem Aleph. What happens if the bust does not include the entire body of the person? The Rambam says it's a Tzuras Adam. So the Shulchan Aruch does bring the opinion that if you only have, for example, the head without the body, or you have the body without the head, then perhaps it's permissible, and the Rama says that V'chei Noyhagin, this is also the custom, that the Isser is only if it's an entire person. The person, including all of the limbs and organs of the person. But if you have a body without a head without a body, there would be no Isser. The Rama says that's the minig, even though there are those who still say that there is another way of looking at it and one should be stringent, as the Shach says, Tovei Alav Bracha. Another interesting discussion is in the Shach in Yoyredeya Simen Kuf Samachalef, and that is, he says, if you make a chatzitzur, if you make a sculpture of a person on an angle, so for example, there'll only be one eye or one ear, then he says it is absolutely permissible because you don't have the tzura of an Adam. A very interesting discussion became in Poiskim concerning dolls. They have dolls and they're mamish replicas, little replicas or large replicas of human bodies, and they're toys that children and sometimes adults love to play with. And sometimes you have the full physique of a human being carved out in the doll, whatever the material of the doll is. So the Shal Satshuvas Maharit in Yerideya Lamed Hey, he says the whole point is just a game. It's fun. It's a toy. So therefore, the whole idea here is not relevant. The Rambam says you can mistake it for a divine image. You can mistake it for an idol. He says the whole idea doesn't apply. It's just for a game. It's not permanent. It's not fixed. He says not only are you allowed to have it, you're also allowed to make it, even though making is really, really the big issue. Rabbi Vadya Yosef and Shutya Biyoyma Yeridea Simantes, he says, listen, when it comes to making these dolls, he says he thinks it may be problematic. He thinks buying them and holding them in the house and playing with them, he thinks there is room to be lenient, even though there are those who are stringent about this, and they suggest, you know, poke out an eye, or take off an ear, or get rid of the nose, etc. I should say that there is the opinion that they quote from the Chachmas Adam, who says that he feels that nowadays everything is different, based on what the Rambam says, that people will think that this is for Avodah Zarah. He says today, when it's very hard to find a person, at least in our societies and cultures, that worships a sculpture of a human being as an Avodah Zarah. It's not the days of Nimrod or Nebuchadnezzar or Caligula or Julius Caesar. So he feels that the whole notion doesn't really have that validity, and therefore it wouldn't be forbidden. But this is not so simple. And as you can understand, many, many argue. So if it comes in terms of a practical question, you should ask your local competent Orthodox rabbi. But this is a very, very fascinating discussion, especially based on what the Sefer HaChinuch explains. It may be that olden days and nowadays there wouldn't be that of a big difference. Okay, Halacha Yud Aleph, which is the last halacha, and a fascinating halacha, and I prepared some pictures for you. I prepared pictures for you so that you'll be able to appreciate what the Rambam is saying. Here we go. Tabas Sheyesh Aleha Chosam, something called a signet ring. You know what a signet ring is? Here you have two pictures. This is from Roman times or Byzantine times. You're dealing with almost 2 millennia ago. Signet rings were the rings that the gentlemen's, here you see a classic picture. The gentlemen's, these were all excavated in archaeological digs. Gentlemen, especially those of royalty and aristocracy, would wear these signet rings and they would sign, especially official documents or treaties or contracts with these rings, which had on them words or pictures or images. This was known as Tabas Sheyesh Aleha Chosam. It's a ring that has on it a seal that was used, Shehu Tzuras Adam. You can have very different types of signet rings. Here you see Tzuras Adam. In one of them you see the image of a person, in one you see the image of an animal. In fact, some of these, I think, were even graven images that some of these cultures used for Avodah Zarah. But here you have these images, you see, Yesh Aleha Tzuras Adam. It has the image of a person. Says the Rambam, fascinating halach. Im hoy sahatsura boiletes. If the tsura was boilet, what do we mean boilet? If the signet of the seal was protruding, it was raised, then asur lahanicha. Then you're not allowed to wear it. Why? Because basically you have here the image of a person, the image of a person protruding out of your signet ring. You're not allowed to wear it. You're not allowed to even have it. But you're allowed to use it to sign. Why? They would usually dip it into wax and sign. And if it was a raised image, if it was a protruding image, then when you signed it, the image became indented. On the other hand, but if the image of the person was an impression, it was sunken, it wasn't raised, it wasn't protruded. On the other hand, like you see here in these images, it was sunken. So then now what? Now, when you sign with it, what happens? You sign it in wax, what happens? It protrudes. So the Rambam says, Mutar lahanicha. You're allowed to wear the ring because the image is an impression. It's engraved, it's indented, and we said before, that's not a problem. But you can use it to sign. Because that which you sign, this tzura, this form, is going to suddenly be raised and protrude, and that you're not allowed to create. So therefore, it would be forbidden. Here you have, till now you have the Roman and the Byzantine signet rings. Here you have Jewish signet rings. These were excavated not long ago. And on the left one here, you see it's reddish, brownish. This says the name of King Chizkiyahu. And some were suggesting that maybe this was the signet ring used by Chizkiyahu, or used by the palace of Chizkiyahu, or used in the times of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu, lived, of course, during the second Beis Hamikdash. We spoke about Chizkiyo in chapter 2 of Hilchas Avodah Zarah, the story with Eliakim and Shavna and Rav Shakeh, remember? So this is a signet ring from the time of Chizkiyo. So you're dealing first Beis Hamikdash. Here you have another signet ring from the same time. You see the one on the right? But this is the Jewish signet rings. There's no image of a person here. You see basically here letters and words of names. And this is what's used as a signet ring. So this is the distinction the Rambam makes. The Rambam says, V'chein asur lotzur dmus chama ulevana kaychavim umazolus amalachim. You're also not allowed to create an image of the sun, of the moon, kaychavim, the stars, umazolus, the constellations, umalachim, angels. Shenemar loisasun iti. Come back to the previous pasuk. Loisasun iti elehe kesef velehe zav loisasu lechem. Don't make with me gods of silver and gold. Loitasun kidmus shamash namacham shalafanai b'marim. Chazal explained, what does it mean, don't make with me? It means, don't create the image of those who are with me, those who serve me up high in heaven, which means the sun and the moon and various heavenly bodies and constellations. They are with me, so to speak. They are up there, remote, abstract, transcendent, elevated in heaven. Don't make their image. V'afilu al aluach. And here the Rambam says, even if you engrave those images on a tablet, which means it's not raised, it's not protruding. On the contrary, there's an impression, it's indented, it's sunken. Or it's just a tapestry. The Rambam says, you're not allowed to. The image of animals or any other living organism besides a human being, the picture, the forms of trees, or chayim, grass, v'kayitzaben, similar, mutar lotzuraisan v'afilu haisatzura beletas. You're allowed to form them, make a form of them, make an image of them, and even if they are sculptured, you can have a sculpture of a tree, of an animal, of any living organism, of anything that exists on planet Earth, you're allowed to make a sculpture of it, not only a tapestry, and not only indented, but even a protruding sculpture of this, you're allowed to, besides a human being. That's what the Rambam tells us, because this is not loisasun iti. So this means as follows. When it comes to the heavenly bodies, the Rambam here is very strict. The Rambam says, you can't even have a tapestry. You can't even have a picture of the sun and the moon, you're not allowed to make. And you can't make a sunken image, or could you make a protruding image, a sculpture of it? That you're not allowed. When it comes to a person, you're allowed to have a tapestry, allowed to have a picture, allowed to have a portrait, you're allowed to engrave it on a tablet, on a countertop, that's fine, but you're not allowed to have a protruding image of the body of a human being, a raised image. When it comes to everything else on planet Earth, like all of the animals, etc., the Rambam says it's no problem whatsoever. They don't fall into this category of leisasun iti, because there is no mistake, according to the Rambam, that this is done for Avodah Zarah. And we explained, loisasun iti, loisasun oisi, an animal is not in the image of God, so you're not creating God's image, and it's not the sun and the moon, and therefore you're allowed to do it. The Ravid wonders, why is the Rambam so stringent when it comes to the sun and the moon? It doesn't make sense. A person, you're allowed to make a tapestry of a person. You're allowed to have a person's image woven into the fabric of a garment. Why the sun and the moon are much more stringent? So the basic answer for is, the Ravid says there's really no difference between the sun and the moon and the person. It's both forbidden in both situations. That's what the Ravid says. However, the Kesef Mishnah explains something very fascinating, and Tosfos says this, that basically, when we see a person, we see a person as three-dimensional. So therefore, a sculpture of a person is a replica of a person. If it's just a picture of a person, it's not a replica of a person. And the same is true if it's indented, if it's a sunken image, it's not a replica of a person. But when we look up in the sky, we don't see the sun in three-dimensional sun or three-dimensional moon, even though it is, but we just don't see it that way. You know, we see it all at the surface of a sky, and therefore we only see it as two-dimensional. And therefore here the Rambam says, when you make an image of the sun and the moon, even if it's two-dimensional, it's considered an image of the sun and the moon, and then it would be forbidden. Others also explain that when it comes to the sun and the moon, because this was so common, this is what they used to worship. Remember, the whole Avodah Zarah began how? From worshiping the heavenly constellations. So therefore, the rabbis prohibited this. The rabbis prohibited any picture of the sun and the moon because this is literally, it was constantly being used for idolatry. This was the classic symbol and the classic usage of idolatry. So therefore here, they became much more stringent. So this would be a rabbinic prohibition when it comes to the sun and the moon. At least that's how the Rambam understands it. The obvious big question is, the Gemara discusses this, Rabbi Gamliel in his office used to have pictures of the moon, and he used to investigate the witnesses when they would come for Rosh Chodesh, and he would say that the moon looked like this, the moon looked like this. And the Gemara explains, and the Rambam clearly indicates it, he says, Asur lasa suris linoi. This is only if it's for decoration. But if it's done for learning, for education, if you need these images to understand understand astronomy, to understand how the world works, to understand how biology works, to understand how nature works. There's an educational use here. Then these prohibitions do not apply, and therefore Reb Gamliel can have these images. Another interesting question is Shevet Yisachar. The Medrash says Yisachar had the picture of the moon and the sun in its flag. What about that? Was it not for decoration? That seems to be for decoration. The Tzitz Eliezer brings the name of Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, the famous Sarif of Brisk, one of the great Goyni Adar in the 1800s. He said Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin says that the prohibition is only if you create an image, if you take a picture, make a picture of the sun and the moon in the exact size that we actually observe them in the heaven. If you make them in that exact size, and it's not for educational purpose, it's for beauty, then we have this problem because it's like a replica of the actual sun and moon that we observe, that it may be seen as something that is similar to idolatry, or you're making an image of those who serve with God. But if it's done in any other size, according to the Tzitz Eliezer, he brings an opinion that it would be permissible.